Well, my name is Bob, and I am an alcoholic. I didn't like to admit that, but I am one. Just to give you a little background on myself, I came into the program in 1994. I've been around for a little while. With Alan there, we were talking about service. I got into service right away. I secretaried a lot of meetings. Larry here. I was the manager of the Alana Club. Secretaried the noon meetings for, you know, I did this for about 5 years. When I first came, I went to, probably 2 or 3 meetings a day. I had a serious problem and didn't know it. I started out going to meetings over in Tulare, but let me tell you how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a friend of mine that that we used to drink a lot together, and he's still a friend, and he still belongs to this program. He's got about 5 years more than I am. And I was asked to retire and or get fired. And so I did retire, and of course you know that it was their fault. It wasn't mine. Everything was their fault. When I first came in here, I was full of denial. Denial about everything. And, if you've been around here a while, you've probably heard that this is the last house on the block. Didn't have any other place to go. Family didn't want me around. Nobody. So I called up my friend, went over to his house, and we sat in the kitchen there and table and talked, and he knew what I was there for, but I couldn't tell him, you know. I couldn't ask for help. I'm not very good at that. Asking for help. So, he finally broke the ice and said, what's up? So I told him what happened. And he said, do you think it had anything to do with you drinking? And I said, yeah, I think it did. And he said, do you think you got a problem? You know, we drank a long time. You knew I had one, and, you know, I knew you had one, too. So I said, well, got no place to live. And he said, well, tell you what I'm going to do. You can come and stay with me, but you have to do one thing. And you probably already said it under your breath. He has to go to some meetings. So what he did, he called a lot of his friends, and my friends, too. A guy by the name of Grass, which you probably heard of or know. And a couple other guys. They'd been in the program a while, so they all came over the house. I guess he thought that I was going to fight this thing. But when I got here, it was the last place. You know, I got here and I was pitiful. You know, from a person that's always taking care of himself, all his life, worked myself into a nice position with a large company, made lots of money, and. And here I was, no place to go. At 55 years old. So, gathered my stuff, whatever I had, brought it over to his house, and it was on a Thursday. The things you remember, you know? It was on a Thursday. So he said, there's a meeting over there in Tulare, and I want you to go. And I said, well, are you coming with me? He says, no. You can go by yourself. Tell me where it was and all that other stuff. And I said, well, okay. So I went there, got in there, and I didn't see any familiar faces. So I sat down, and a few people came up to me and asked me what my name was. I told them it's Bob, but I didn't tell them I was an alcoholic, though. So I sat there and just listened, you know. Someone asked me if I would like to talk, and I says, no, no thanks. And after the meeting, I went home to my buddy's house, and he was sitting there watching TV, and I sat down on the couch, and he said, well, how's the meeting? I said, I was all right, you know. He said, well, what'd you think about it? I said, that was all right. And he kind of looked at me funny, like, you got something to say, but what is it? So I said, well, tell me something. I said, did you go down there and tell those people I was coming down there? And he looked at me kind of funny. I said, what do you mean? I said, Dave, I could have swore there's a lot of people down there that knew me. You know, they started talking about things that, at the time, were very personal to me, you know. The drinking, the getting drunk, the getting rowdy, you know, all these stories, you know. And so that's how I started out with Alcoholics Anonymous. I kept going to that meeting. Like I told you, I went to a meeting at least one a day because I was a real sick, sick person. You know, mentally and physically. I had totally lost all faith in myself, and I was just beaten up. And I was beaten up more by myself than anybody else. I came to realize that. I didn't know that in the beginning. It took a while. And it took a while to go into meetings there, you know, before, her name was Sylvia. She ran the meeting. She's been around here for a long time, her and her husband. And they're good members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So she'd asked me before, so she said, gee, Bob, don't you think it's time you said something? It's probably been 3 or 4 months. And I wouldn't do it before because, all of you know why. Because I knew I had to stand up at that meeting, I had to stand up. I had to stand up and admit that I had to say them words, you know. I had to say, my name is Bob and I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to admit to myself that I really had a problem with alcohol. It was still somebody else's, you know. But I did. And, you know, after I left that meeting, driving home, I just kind of felt kind of a real relief. know. Can't tell you what it really was. It just, you know, like sometimes you go, it's finally off my chest. Finally. You know, admitting it to someone else wasn't a problem. I didn't have a problem with that. What I didn't want to do is admit it to myself. Alcoholism runs in my family. Came from a family of 7 people. 4 sisters, 3 brothers. And out of the family, 4 of us got it. My oldest brother, we had kind of a real split family. I had 2 brothers and a sister that was 19, 17, and 15 years older than me. And then there was my 3 sisters and me. And my next to the oldest brother, he died of alcoholism. He drank himself to death. Worked every day, though. Every day. And he just, you know, finally got, you know, the emphysema, the liver problems, everything. And that's what killed him. Then there was me and 2 sisters that were kind of, you know, you could probably say they just can't hold their alcohol very well. But they sense have quit. And I had my older brother, you know, I used to look at him in amazement, you know. The more he drank, the more he smiled and laughed and loved everybody, you know. And he was totally, totally opposite of me and my other brother. We were the opposite. We were very nice drunks. We were bad drunks. So, that's kind of the, you know, today I know that it's a disease. It's the gene, the bad one. And I got it. And, you know, that was hard to admit, too, you know. Because all my life I've seen, you know, drunk and disorderly. You know, I had a brother, that brother, he had a lot of things on his mind. He was wounded in Iwo Jima, and he never would talk about it. He got wounded, and he was wounded here, you know. And that was kind of what we all thought and everything, but until I got here, I found out that that wasn't the cause. Symptom. And I was the same way, you know. It's like I said, it took me a long time to get here. I've been even in high school, you know, I had a problem drinking. But I was able to control it. And at times, then I would get, you know, like probably a lot of you, I would go overboard, you know, get drunk, and disorderly, and whatever, you know. My mother and them used to call it just, oh, you're just being ornery, you know. And just tolerate it. And but as I progressed in life, I had lots of jobs where with this company where drinking was pretty important. PR, and that's when it really, really started to, I got to drink every day. And I did. Drank every day. Even when, you know, I wasn't in the fullness of my disease, I still drank every day, you know. And I never could drink a couple of beers, or let's go down and have the beer, you know. If we were going to go drink, we were going to drink. And that's the way I operated. In the latter part of my years, I drank for effect. I drank to get screwed up. I wanted to be there. I liked it there. And, you know, it was always the same thing. I just, I admitted to myself and others, I drink because I want to. You know that story, the easy way out. Hey, I like it. Not that I have to. I like it. And it became part of my life. I wasn't a drinker that drank at home. Rarely did I drink at home. I was a barroom drinker. I loved the bars. Any kind of bar. From the lowest level bar you could find to the highest. And I did that. I loved that scene. And the action. I was addicted to it, too. And as we know in the program here, it didn't get any better. It got worse. You know, and then things started happening in my life. You know, a crisis here and a crisis there, and like a lot of us. And I began to use alcohol. As a matter of fact, now that I'm able to think about it, it was my medicine. It really was. It was a medicine. It cured the things that were going on in my head, and just everything. Once I started, I couldn't stop. I was, you know, at first I thought I was, when I first came here, I thought I was pretty unique, you know, like a lot of us. Until you sit around here a while and, like I said with my friend, you know, did you tell them people about me? You know, what's going on? But as I came around here more and more, I started seeing the similarities rather than, I'm not like him or her. I am. In a lot of ways, we're a lot alike. And, you know, I, when I think back, when I first got here, you know, I was trying to think of, when I talked here tonight, of, you know, what really got you involved in the program? Well, there's one little simple word that says it all. What I found here was hope. Because when I got here, there was a lot of people said, this guy ain't never going to make it. It's not going to happen. And, I was one of them. Because, as I told you earlier, I lost total faith in myself. I had, you know, I just was at the bottom. And, I was one of those kind of alcoholics that, you know, I had to get beat down, boy. Because I've got a real strong will. And, that's one of the other things that got me here and made me stay here. You know, I heard the message that, Bob, you better get active in this thing if you're going to make it. And I did that. And I didn't learn all this stuff by myself either. I had some mentors. I had a sponsor. But I also had mentors. people that just made suggestions to me, don't tell me what to do, but you can make suggestions to me. And a lot of them was, I took over a meeting. I had about 6-8 months, and they said it was all right. And so Larry there, and I did it for 2 years, and I never, ever missed a Monday night. Never. And I can tell you that. No matter what. Because it's kind of the thing I needed. You know, I needed some discipline. I had none. You know, the only person I ever believed in was me. Back when. So I did it. And I also chaired a meeting at the Alano Club at noon. And before the meeting would start, you know, I would make myself go sweep the floor. Because I hadn't, you know, I needed to be humbled. Really humbled. So I go in, sweep the floor. I set up the chairs by myself. Nobody told me to do that. I just figured out this was a good way to do something without trying to get a pat on the back. What's in it for me? Yeah. When I got here, I was very selfish and self-centered, you know. And I can tell you today I'm not that way. You know. But it did take the program. And it took me a long time. It didn't come overnight to where, you know, I was just at peace with everything because I was a lot of turmoil. I had a lot of anger. As a matter of fact, I had to go seek other help for that. And I did that. I did that. As a matter of fact, I since became friends with this doctor and her husband, Jordan. And she tells me this afterwards, you know. There was about 3 or 4 times I went in to see her, and for 45 minutes, I never said a word. Not one. She did paperwork, but I just sat there and looked at the wall. And then one day I went in, and she told her husband, she says, I got to get rid of this guy. He's going to absolutely blow up on me. And I went once a week. So the next time I went, sat down, high and all of this good stuff and everything, and she just popped a question out. She says, how do you feel today? And for 45 minutes, I couldn't shut my mouth. As a matter of fact, you know, I looked at my watch and I said, is it time to go already? The other thing I am is the stuffer, you know. I hold everything in, which is not good. It is not a good thing to do that. Because remember I told you I was one of those kind of people that I'll take care of it myself. Because that's the way I was brought up. That's how my mom and dad were. Ever since I was little, take care. You take care of it yourself. And it made me stuff things and not let things out. So that was another good thing that came of the program. And she encouraged me. You know, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to stick around here. Wasn't quite sure that I was like you. You know. As they say, I hadn't got the message. You know, that's what we come here for. And you get it in the strangest places. I was at a meeting in Tulare. And there was a guy, he worked in the oil fields. And he used to drink a fifth to a two-fifths a day. And he always put them under his seat. You know, and I became kind of friends with him. I asked, what the hell did you do that for? And he says, well, it gets hot. And when you drink it, it gets into your blood a lot quicker. Huh. Didn't know that. So one day, I went to a meeting. And he was there, and he got up and spoke. And, you know, this is the day I got the message. What happened is he was a big old burly guy, you know, everything. And I didn't come from that background. I came from the suit and tie and everything like that. And who would have thought I would get the message from him? But what happened is he started talking about his feelings, you know, real deep down stuff. And I hadn't been in touch with my feelings in years. He just started talking about him, his innermost self, and what happened to him, and you know, that's when I said to myself, you're just like him. Just exactly like him. And no, you don't go to the same office and all this other crap, but you are just like him. So that's the day I learned, my God, you ain't any different than anybody else, and you are an alcoholic. Right to the bone. You know, and, it's the day I started to get in touch with my feelings. And it was very painful. I had a lot of things in my past, just like the rest of you, that I didn't want to look at. So it took a while, and I did get in them steps. And I can tell you all right now that that was the most important thing in my life I ever done. You know, I finally, you know, I told you I was a stuffer. I never talked much about my personal self. And, you know, that's when I started to unload a lot of stuff that had been back there and, for a long, long time. And it wasn't all nice stuff. Not all of it was ugly. I looked at both of it, you know, because a friend of mine told me, you know, just don't look at the dark side. You know, look at the other side, too. But it was that dark side that held me down, kept me down, and would not let me make any progress in my life. Progress meaning, you know, I'd become more me. How to find out who the real me was. Because, you know, like in the book, I was the great pretender. You know. I could talk you into anything. But, I couldn't deal too much with myself. Didn't want to. So that was one of my biggest problems was taking a look at me. Well, you know, after I went through first, second, third, and first, it was pretty damn easy. After I finally said it that one day that, yeah, my name is Bob and I'm an alcoholic. There. I said it. Okay? And I went home and I told my buddy that. I said, there, I said it at the meeting. I told everybody. And he said to me, did you tell yourself? And I said, well, I think so.
Yeah,
I did. So So, like I said, I've been here for 14 and a half years. I still keep in touch with my friend. He's still sober. Matter of fact, he's celebrating his birthday this month. It'll have 20 years. And he's turned out to be a completely, totally different person than the one I knew 20 years ago. And I went to a lot of meetings, stayed very close to Alcoholics Anonymous. It became part of my life. It had to be, you know. I'm the kind that needed to hear that message and needed to hear that, you know, you're not the only one, Bob. There are others that have the same problem as you do. And, you know, the other thing that I started doing was I started helping other people. Bob Cormier helping other people. Strange thing. But that's when I learned the gift that it was. The Christians call it that getting the grace, you know, making yourself feel good inside. But I didn't know what that was for a long, long time, feeling good inside. So I got to the point where I liked it and sponsored a lot of people. Participated in a lot of programs. I really got involved with it. I ran, I was the manager of 5 recovery homes, got involved in that. That was too much for me. Got out of that. And, I just kind of volunteered for everything. And it was a selfish reason. It was to help me get rid of my selfishness and my self-centeredness. Because I had a little problem with that. You know, if I'm going to do something for you, you're going to do something for me. But that's gone. It's history. It's never come back since. You know, I learned how important it is to think of other people. Whoa. And how important it is to, I didn't mind sharing my money or anything like that, but what I wouldn't share is my time. And today I can do that. Today, if somebody walks up to me and said, "Hey, can I talk to you?" You sure can. Because I know how important it is. You know, I tried to do this thing, as I told you earlier, all by myself. And it can't be done. I am convinced that you can't do this by yourself. No way, no how. So, I started getting involved in more in that, and I liked it. You know, I became a giver rather than a taker. You know, and I started getting this thing I just talked about a little earlier, this thing they call grace, you know. It took a few years. And this thing called grace made me feel good about myself. It made me more peaceful. And that's something for me. I never was peaceful. There was always chaos in my life, and I liked it. I thought I did. So today I've learned to know that a lot of people call it I've become centered, you know. I don't dislike myself today. As a matter of fact, I kind of like the way I am today. And that took a long time. Because, like most alcoholics, I was my own worst enemy. Nobody could beat me up like I beat myself up. Very critical. And I didn't know how to get away from that. You know. Until I started learning how to like myself. You know, in the beginning, I had to get rid of all the crap, the negative things and everything else. But then, after I gave that away, gave it to God, and when I gave it away, I gave it away. I rarely ever think about any of those things anymore. Because what I believe is, if you do it one time, and if you keep talking about it, it never goes away from where you really live. And where you really live is up here. You live with your thoughts. So, when I give things away, or when I forgive for something, or I never say I'm sorry. Because that's a sorry-ass word. That doesn't mean nothing. It didn't to me. It's either I apologize or, sorry I hurt you. So, when I give these things away, and I had to do that. A lot of what started me having to leave my work in 1986 I got renal cell carcinoma, which is cancer of the kidney. And two people out of, I never talk about this. Two people out of 100 make it past 5 years. Not too good odds, is it? So, you know, and I was always, thought I was really tough-minded, you know. But that 2 out of 100 are always back here somewhere. And that's what also increased my drinking more and more and more and more. Until, it took 8 years, though. Until I finally, you know, reached out and asked for help. But, you know, I, this last year here wasn't a really good year for me, for a lot of reasons. I got another cancer. And, what had happened to me is, I lost it, and I kind of went back to a little bit of that old behavior. Because when I first came here, God wasn't my buddy at all. And I had to, he is today. But it kind of flipped me over, you know. What are you doing to me again? You know, come on. How much are you going to throw on me? And that went on for a few months until I had a talk with a friend. And he reminded me that he was always there before. And he's there now. And you just have to trust in him. And that's what a lot of us have to learn. You know, trust in God. Whoever your God is. That's another thing. You know, when I got here, I'm glad they didn't say, you know, they said higher power instead of God or Jesus or Muhammad or whatever, because I'd have probably walked out because he was not my friend. So, I found him. I still have him. And I got over that. And the way I got over this, everything came out fine. You know, I had to get that faith back again, that trust. And I did. But it was true. I couldn't do it by myself. Here we go again. You know, I had to ask a good friend, you know, what's wrong with you? Here's what's wrong with me. And, you know, life's good now. You know, I'm back to being centered again. And what I mean by being centered is that I'm okay with life. I'm okay with you. I'm okay with me. I'm not angry. I'm just kind of centered. And the way I look at it, it's I'm probably just right where I'm supposed to be and doing what I'm supposed to do. You know, God has a plan for us all. And I didn't like him taking control. I wanted to control, not him. But I've learned since being around here and everything that I have to, because I'm not big enough to do it, take care of it by myself. Good God. Anyway, I was wondering if I was going to make it for 20 minutes. But anyway, that's where it's at. Life is good. I stay with the program, and I recommend that you too, you know, you find a high power. You find some good friends in this program, and you'll make it. Thank you. I'm sorry.